I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly. Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. Marisa is on maternity leave, and today I'm with guest host Kristen Donnelly, food writer, editor, and cookbook author. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, Joy. I'm an avid listener. Happy to be here. This week, we're talking about chicken confit, kitchery, and herbalism. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week.
So this was a thing I spied in one of my favorite sources for food news, The New Food Economy. And the article's title is, If Food is Medicine, Why Isn't It Taught at Medical School? This is a question I've asked myself countless times.
Seriously.
I know you're really interested in all things health as well. Do you have a thought?
Well, I did have a thought. I mean, I do think that there is some positive movement in this area, mm-hmm. in that there are more medical professionals, including doctors, interested in food and nutrition. But I was actually surprised at how optional it still is in medical school when I read this.
I mean, I hope everyone will go read this article, but some of the disturbing facts presented in it are that doctors spend less than 1% of their lecture time in med school learning about diet, and only 14% of doctors feel like they can offer nutrition advice.
Yeah, and that's crazy.
It is crazy, but it was really something that I saw in the wild, so to speak, because I'm working on a couple of stories for Epicurious about diet as it relates to inflammatory bowel disease. Mm-hmm. And so my editors there naturally wanted me to talk to dietitians, but they also wanted me to talk to doctors, you know, specialists, GI doctors who specialize in it. And more than one doctor said to me, I don't know, we have three nutritionists that work in this office. Why don't you talk to one of them? They know much more about this than I do, which I found a little disturbing.
I can see how that's disturbing, but I can also see that doctors only have so much time. And what I even gained from that article is that it's not so much about the doctor having in-depth knowledge about diet, but just being able to spot when there is a true dietary issue and maybe give some surface advice and then be able to refer to somebody who has in-depth knowledge of nutrition.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I just feel like there's so many conditions that are related to diet. The article that we're talking about pointed to a 2017 study in The Lancet that said that poor diet kills 1 in 5 Americans. And I actually had a dinner with a dietitian last night, and I was talking to her about this, and she said, really? I have read that it's 1 in 3.
Wow.
So it just seems like what kind of doctor's office visit shouldn't include some kind of nutritional counseling? I don't know. Tell me more, though, about what you said, that there's some positive movement happening.
Yeah. So I've been working on a book with the Chef's Garden, which is a farm in Ohio. And it's actually, they're really interested in this space of food as medicine. And they're doing a ton of research on the nutritional value and density of vegetables and how the different ways you can grow the vegetables might affect their nutrition. Mm-hmm. And something I found interesting while working on that project is they attend these soil conferences. There's a big movement around regenerative agriculture, which basically has to do with building the soil rather than sort of constantly stripping it of nutrients. So build the soil it's just better for the vegetables, better for the environment, et cetera. But they said at these conferences, sometimes it's up to a third of medical professionals, which I found kind of amazing. It showed me that, you know, there is not only interest in diet and nutrition, but also the connection between agriculture and nutrition.
That's great. That is encouraging.
Yeah. So I don't know if you remember Marianne Williamson. She's the woman who was running for president and like made fun of on Saturday Night Live for being really woo-woo. But something
How could I forget Marianne Williamson?
I know. How could you? But something I like that she said when everybody was talking about our healthcare system is we don't have a healthcare system. We have a sickness care system. And I do think that's true. I think a lot of doctors don't spend enough time encouraging people on how to stay well. They just try to fix it once they're sick. So.
Right. Well, I might be more pessimistic about this than you are, but my feeling is that big pharmaceutical companies and hospital systems don't benefit from people preventing type 2 diabetes by eating more leafy greens. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that the profit motive that's inherent in the way our healthcare system works today actually works against our health.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true.
So,
And when I say I think that there is positive movement, I still think it's probably another generation before there is real change. So,
right. Well, I will share this in the show notes. I hope that you read it and share your own thoughts with us in the comments section. We want to know what you think. It's kind of a heavy topic, so let's move on to something a little bit less depressing.
Yeah. And,
let's talk about what's for dinner this week around your table, Kristen.
So what's for dinner this past week is something I discovered at the grocery store, and maybe not something your doctor would prescribe for health, but it's chicken confit from D'Artagnan. D'Artagnan is a company that does a lot of French-inspired products like duck confit, even various pâtés. But they now have a chicken confit. It's chicken leg. It's pre-cooked, pre-seasoned, and really all you have to do is heat it up. And you can heat it up and crisp the skin. So it just becomes like really delicious, like really luscious. I feel it's just a nice addition if you're cooking a lot of vegetables and want a little bit of meat, or a salad and a little bit of meat with it. Or even lunch. I work from home. I know you work from home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something that's nice to have around. Also, my husband doesn't cook very much or well. And so it's something where I can be like, oh, there's the chicken confit in the fridge. Just heat it up and go.
Am I remembering right that one of your social media handles is Kristen Confit?
It was Kristen Confit. Yeah.
Do you have a special love for all things confit?
I do, but I think that was more confit is like, it means preserved. And so I think it was the idea of it's everything that I was writing on a blog or in social media was preserved. So.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So first of all, are you shopping at a big chain grocery store, or
yeah,
are you buying this at a specialty market?
This was at the Giant.
Oh, cool.
I shop at the Giant. It does have, I don't know that every Giant, I am in the Philadelphia area. I don't know if every Giant in the Philadelphia area has a section of D'Artagnan products, but ours does. It's pretty small. And every once in a while, I just sort of nose around over there and see what mm-hmm. they have. And this was there, and it has a new sticker on it. So it's just something I love. I love like chicken and chicken fat and skin. Like, I love crispy chicken skin. I'm not going to lie. I'd take it over bacon any day. So it was just a fun discovery. It wasn't that expensive.
How many chicken legs come in the package?
It's 2 chicken legs.
Gotcha. So if you're going to use it to put on salad or whatever, that might be enough for 4 people even.
Yeah, I was surprised. It was 2 leg quarters. I cooked for a total of 4 people and had the 4 leg quarters in there, but I separated them between the thigh and the drumstick,
mm-hmm.
and I had pieces left over.
I think
it was just that it's just that rich. So,
well, that sounds like a very convenient way to get dinner together quicker and in a really tasty way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good to know. I don't know. I don't know if I aired this episode yet, actually, but I've been really watching my saturated fat because my cholesterol is up again.
Got it.
But that sounds like it would be a very worthy once in a while treat.
It's a treat. I mean, even I don't even know if I'll buy it once a week, to tell the truth, but
mm-hmm. once in a while.
So I thought it was just a nice treat.
Now let's talk about another dish that you're making that is a little bit on the opposite end of the spectrum. Can you say it for me? I feel like I always say it wrong.
Sure. It's khichdi, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Khichdi.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is it?
Khichdi, my understanding, is a dish. It's a comfort food dish served all over India, possibly a lot of South Asia. And it sort of varies depending on – it's one of those dishes that varies cook to cook. It also has a strong presence in Ayurvedic medicine, which does incorporate a lot of dietary advice, I would say, or dietary principles.
Do you go in for all that?
For Ayurveda?
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning about it. I think it's really interesting to learn about. I wouldn't say I practice it.
Okay. One thing about Ayurveda, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they divide people into four sort of basic constitutions or body types.
Yes, it's three. It's called doshas. Mm-hmm. And it's a constitution. And
it's only three?
It's three, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's constitutions. And it's basically believed that everybody has those three energies or constitutions within them. But people tend to show a dominant one. And it's often about keeping those dosha in balance.
Do you identify with one of the doshas?
I do. I do.
You do. Yeah. Which one do you feel like you are?
Vata.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Yeah, Vata dosha.
Now, before you get into telling us how you make your version, which I'm sure is delicious, I will tell you that my exposure to this dish has mostly been through my yoga nut sister.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I've had it at like ashrams and yoga centers.
Uh-huh.
And it has always been totally disgusting.
Uh-huh.
Like nary a grain of salt.
Oh, yeah. No.
Like no flavor at all. Like if there are minuscule amounts of fat, if any at all. So I'm hoping that you can convince me that it can be both nutritious and delicious.
Yeah. So khichdi is a dish that in Ayurveda, I think it's often like prescribed, you know, your digestion's out of balance, or basically if anything is out of balance, a lot of times Ayurvedic practitioners will advise having khichdi. And it is designed to be very easy to digest because it's white basmati rice and yellow mung bean lentils. So it's basically hulled mung beans.
The same yellow lentils you'd make dal with, right?
You can make a dal with it.
Okay.
I think there's a yellow split pea, and this is different from the yellow mung beans. I don't know why these lentils are a little bit hard to find. You can order them online very easily or find them in an Indian market, but they're not always a grocery store staple. So I tend to order in bulk online. They do have a different flavor and almost like a buttery quality in my mind. But in any case, I do use salt. I do use fat. What I tend to do is I do it in my Instant Pot, and I make this a lot of times in the morning to have for lunch when I'm working from home. And I will do, in the Instant Pot saute function, melt some fat. I either use ghee if I have it. Just a neutral oil is fine. You can use coconut oil. It's more just about getting the fat in there so you can saute your spices and aromatics.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to use a little cumin seed, coriander seed, fennel seed, turmeric, like a tiny pinch of turmeric. And then sometimes I add fresh ginger. Sometimes I add onions and garlic. Sometimes I don't add either. I do season that well. And then I'll add 1/4 cup of the lentils and 1/4 cup of the white basmati rice and 3 cups of liquid. And most important, if you're adding that much liquid, is the sweet potato. I do add one diced sweet potato. I leave the skin on. And then do 4 minutes on high pressure. And then it just kind of hangs out until it's ready. Another thing, just to make it delicious, I do season it with more salt if I feel like it needs it. And then I tend to do fun garnishes. So I'll do pistachios, like chopped pistachios and cilantro, and sometimes toasted coconut. Sometimes if I have a little bit of a chutney around, I'll drizzle that over. In Ayurveda, it's often believed like they'll make khichdi as the base, and then they vary the garnishes or the vegetables added based on how you need to be balanced. Again, it's worth reading about if you're interested in that. I've just decided my favorite thing to add is sweet potato. I think it kind of just adds a little more substance, and the sweetness is really nice in it. When I've made it without sweet potato, I don't like it as much.
Mm-hmm. So, does this make a couple of servings for you?
It makes 2 servings. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like certainly more delicious than anything I've ever had at Yogaville. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not meant to be. I've seen some people make it where they cook the rice separately and they cook the lentils separately so they can maintain some of that texture. To me, it's sort of meant to be this soothing, almost like mushy, but comforting dish. And it's certainly not like high gourmet. It's cozy.
And it does sound pretty nourishing. I mean, anytime you combine lentils and sweet potatoes, you're getting a lot of fiber, a lot of vitamins. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a pretty good lunch to me. You might have inspired me to give it another chance because I have been very anti, but I do like all those things. I don't know. I really dislike things that are not seasoned enough. So maybe that's what gave me the wrong idea about kajuri, but maybe I'll try it your way.
Yeah, and, definitely I'll use salt.
If you can have
salt, definitely use it.
And it does sound like a great work from home option where you can put it on earlier and then have it when you're ready. Mm-hmm. Good to know, Kristen. You have like a stealth healthiness, I think. Like, you don't seem like an overt preacher of health food, but you do always have like great healthy ideas up your sleeve. So I appreciate that.
Oh, good.
All right. And our next segment is going to be, health centered as well. We're doing a health episode.
Except the chicken confit. You got to balance, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess I don't think there's anything inherently unhealthy about a moderate amount of chicken confit. It's just for some people, some unlucky people like me that are especially vulnerable to high cholesterol. We're the ones that have to miss out, I guess. But I'm sure for you and for my husband, like, it's a perfectly healthy addition. But let's talk about herbs. They're healthy for everyone.
Yes, they are.
So I hear you're taking a class.
Yeah. So as part of this project with the Chef's Garden, I decided to learn more about gardening, but also the medicinal uses of herbs. They grow a lot of microgreens and micro herbs that they sell to chefs for culinary purposes, but a lot of those herbs do have a tradition of being used in medicine, and I just found that fascinating. And I live in Bucks County, and there's a really wonderful farm in Doylestown called Barefoot Botanicals. They are devoted to both culinary and medicinal herbs, and the owner, Linda, she is a nurse as well as an herbalist and a farmer. And I really enjoyed her approach. She brings in a lot of ancient traditions such as Ayurveda or Chinese medicine, but she is grounded in also a Western approach to medicine. So she does bring a little bit of skepticism to some claims around herbs. And she teaches in that sort of scientific way. There is a lot in the herbalism community around the energetics of plants and cleansing rituals and all kinds of other things. And I'm not knocking that. It's just, it wasn't her approach, and I appreciated, I guess it's like a less woo-woo approach to herbalism. And it was just a wonderful, I mean, if anybody has a full day once a month during the growing season, basically April through October, I definitely encourage you to check out Barefoot Botanicals and look at that class, because it was just, I think it was the best thing I did all year.
Is it a series or is it a one day session?
I think she will do more one day sessions next year, but this was a series.
Once
a month from 10 to 5.
And you did it from how many months?
It was 7 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it would be a mix of listening to lecture and then taking walks and looking at plants and then making stuff. So
what are some of your takeaways? I'm asking, are you treating yourself or your family with herbs?
I am. I mean, some of my takeaways were that there is a lot we do already as cooks, where we can just sort of enhance what we're making, especially this season where we're transitioning. I mean, we're well into fall, but I still think there's that warm weather, and we're kind of transitioning into getting like into the winter where we're more susceptible to things like colds. So just trying to like do things to build our immune system. There are things like elderberry syrup that, I mean, if you're online, again, it's like the online thing. People claim elderberry syrup can like prevent everything, but it can have an immune building effect. Another thing.
How do you use it? Do you just like put it in a spoon and just take it? Or
you can do that. Put it in a spoon, just take it. I sometimes dilute it in water, in hot water. Sometimes I'll add an herbal tea bag with hot water and a little bit of, kind of use the syrup almost as the sweetener. Mm-hmm. In a tea. That's how I give it to my daughter a lot. It can be a little sweet just on its own, but that's also fine. In seltzer is fine.
And it has immune boosting effects, you think?
Yes, that's the tradition of it. It's really high in antioxidants as well, the specific berry.
Are you making it or do you buy it prepared?
We made it in class.
Oh.
And I have bought it before.
I'm sure she probably sells it, right?
You know, I don't know if she sells it. It's funny. Huh. There's some stuff she makes just for herself and some stuff she does make to sell. And I think it just depends on what people buy. I'm not sure if she sells it, to be honest, but there are people that sell it. You can find it. They have like a commercial version at the CVS or
really?
Yeah, your own pharmacy. Yep.
So you have that. And what else are you doing as a result of this class?
So fire cider is another interesting, herbalism tradition. And
can you describe it?
I will describe fire cider. It's basically infused apple cider vinegar and it's infused with a lot of pungent ingredients. So chili, hence the fire, as well as onions, garlic, horseradish. You can also add things like ginger or herbs such as rosemary. And there is a brand on the market called Fire Cider. And that's honestly where I first heard about it. I think it's Shire City Herbals who makes it. But also if you go to Etsy, I mean, you'll find like a zillion fire ciders.
I actually have one in my fridge that I bought from Food and Ferments, which vends at some of our farmers markets.
Very cool.
I bought it like in desperation to try to kick a lingering cold.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it helped, but
yeah.
I would break it out again, I guess.
There are a few interesting things about fire cider. One, just as a cook, we made it in class and I've loved adding it just to like soup. Like I did like some chicken broth with some greens and that might have been it. And then I added the fire cider for like brightness, but also because of all the onion and garlic, it brought that like allium pungency.
That's something I would have not considered. Maybe I'll start cooking with my fire cider.
Yeah, I started using it as a culinary ingredient. I mean, I think the classic thing to do with it is take it as a shot when you're feeling a cold coming on. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to take it like once an hour or whatever.
Really? Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
I was using it wrong.
Yeah, you're supposed to, like, if you're really trying to kick something. And I do think it with a lot of these herbal preparations, it's supposed to be like when you're feeling something coming on, that's when you try to hit it really hard. But another interesting thing about fire cider is that Shire City Herbals, they trademarked fire cider and they did it because they are a small company and they didn't want the big companies to basically see something catch on and then just make it and kind of kill their business. But the even smaller businesses of individual herbalists were really upset about that because they saw fire cider as a generic term.
Right. It doesn't seem to me like could you trademark chicken soup?
Right, exactly.
Or lentil soup?
Right.
It doesn't seem right.
I think that was their point. So actually a group of herbalists sued to make it generic and they just won. Like the case just was settled. And
do you think it really helps? You must.
I mean, garlic especially has long, long history of medicinal use. Like it has a lot of antimicrobial properties, I believe antiviral as well, especially when raw. Chilies also have a lot of those same healing properties. I mean, I definitely believe it can't hurt.
Yeah, that's so true. Is there anything else, other ways that it's affected your home cooking that you're studying herbalism?
I've just found it fun as like with my daughter to say we're making medicine. Like she really enjoys that idea. So we've done things like skin preparations or we've made some syrups together. I do think it's more than a placebo effect, but I, you know, I what I've learned about it is basically like there's so much to learn. And I know it's basically sparked my interest in learning more, I would say.
I know. We're headed into the winter now, but looking ahead to planning your garden for next year, do you think you'll grow anything, herbs for medicinal herbalism reasons?
For medicinal use. I mean, this year I did end up growing lemon verbena.
Oh. Which is a delicious culinary herb.
It's delicious culinary herb. Delicious. And it dries so well. Like you cut it and it's basically dried within 2 days, and then the leaves retain so much of their fragrance, especially when you crumble them. And that, just as a tea, it's supposed to be like a very uplifting, mood uplifting tea, but can have like some soothing digestive benefits. I mean, maybe not like ginger where it's so punchy, but like just a gentle soothing quality. So my husband tends to get a little depressed in the winter. So I was like
a lot of people.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, you know, I'll save this for those like dark days in January and February where just that sort of like bright lemony, like lightly floral fragrance might just be a little transportive. So that's definitely an herb I would grow again. I have to think about, I don't know. I am going to grow garlic, but that's culinary. Mm-hmm. I would use that both culinary and medicinal.
I guess it is. Yeah. Like you said, a lot of these things are dual purpose, you know?
Oh, and another thing that I just found interesting is these common culinary herbs, thyme, rosemary, a lot of the mint family herbs, they do have very potent antimicrobial effects. And I've done things where you can make you add a lot of fresh or dried thyme or oregano even, but thyme's a little more pleasant too. Steam, and you just inhale that with the hopes that like, if you have something brewing through your nasal passages, it'll kind of help disinfect your nasal passages. So
that's also so cool. Soothing. I'll definitely provide a link to tell me the name of the farm.
Barefoot Botanicals.
Barefoot Botanicals in the show notes for today. If anyone in the southeastern Pennsylvania wants to check it out, I'll certainly go give it a look because cold and flu season is coming on and I hate to be sick. And I also hate medicine, like drugs.
Yeah.
So before we go, Kristen, can you tell us what you are loving right now?
Well, it kind of connects to the Khichri, I guess, but I'm loving tamarind chutney.
Do you make it or buy it?
I've done both, but lately I've been buying it because I found it at the store. It's a brand called Indian Life is the brand I found. But to me, I just love the flavor of tamarind because it's so tangy, but also has this dark flavor. I want to say it's almost like an umami. And then because it's so tangy, it's usually balanced with sugar. So it's the tamarind chutneys, often have this sweet tangy flavor I love. And I just used it this weekend almost as a substitute for balsamic vinegar, in a squash salad. I had squash.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I had squash that wasn't as like flavorful or sweet as it should have been. So I just brushed it onto pieces of roasted squash and threw it under the broiler, and it was really delicious. And sometimes I'll tell my daughter it's barbecue sauce, and she totally believes me.
How old is she again?
She's 7.
Oh, the things you can tell a 7-year-old, I guess.
Yeah, well, she loves barbecue sauce, like jarred barbecue sauce. So
don't we all? Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Kristen. It's been a delight to have you on Local Mouthful.
Thank you so much, Joy. I was so happy to be here and talk about my favorite things.
And that's it for today's episode of Local Mouthful.
Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.